It's 88.5 KCSN, Sky Daniels, joined by a man you weren't born even when that song came out, were you, Nick? We were both discussing how we listened to it.
It was a little before my time, but I wasn't a professional musician when it came out.
But you did see them perform.
Oh, yeah, I saw the Small Faces on more than one occasion. Yeah, I was a great fan of theirs. Yeah, they were fantastic.
By the way, I should let some of the fans who haven't heard me pre-announce the fact that I'm being joined today by truly someone that, when I first started out in radio, this guy was the guy for me, and he's continued on to have an incredible career and to always carry himself with distinction and a distinguished air, and it is the very dapper and debonair Nick Lowe joining us on KCSN.
What a wonderful introduction.
Well deserved, my friend.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
You earn that accolade. You know, it doesn't just get given to you. You have to earn it, and you have earned it.
You're too kind.
Well, stick around because it may get worse. You know, that was the highlight for you. It can go downhill from here. It's such a treat having Nick Lowe join us on KCSN. Nick's just made one of what many critics are proclaiming is an inventive and unique and original holiday album that, unlike a lot of standards and people that make holiday records, you gave an original twist to this record. But you had reservations early, I understand, that the idea of making a holiday record didn't really sit well with you. Is this the case?
Well, I did have reservations, yes. In the UK, holiday records, as you call them, Christmas records
yeah,
as they say over there, they've got rather a bad rep, and it's seen as rather, you know, we have this word over there, naff, which is a bit like uncool. You know,
right.
It doesn't quite mean the same thing. But they're seen as being a bit sort of wet, you know, and also it's sort of mixed up with weird concepts from the 60s, like selling out,
right,
that sort of thing, and I
calculating and I, too somewhat.
Yeah. So and I reacted, you know, in this rather snooty, highfalutin way, you know, and I was rather surprised myself. Why? You know, it was only a phone call from my record company to ask me if I fancied having a go, you know, and I was, well, no, I don't think that's for me, you know.
So there's no duets with Susan Boyle on this,
right? No, who is my competition, I understand. She has one out. But it was later on that day I started sort of asking myself why I reacted like this, and it's precisely why I changed my mind. I thought, well, if the actual genre, you know, I don't like to use words like that, you know, very much. But if the genre isn't actually dead already, I might at best be able to breathe a new life into it and at least have some fun doing it.
And the reviews really have the, you know, I looked at these reviews even before I knew you were coming in and we were going to discuss and play songs from Quality Street. The reviews have been... The critics seem to notice that there is your, you know, twist and your originality. They seem to respect the sensibility and the sensitivity. You know, obviously you weren't going to pander to a Christmas audience, but you do show sensitivity in these songs. Some of the subject matter is pretty real life stories.
Well, I haven't seen any of my notices over here, but that's I'm looking forward to reading
The LA Times said if you get one holiday record this year, this is the one to get. How's that?
They really? That's
I'll get that one too. You can
high praise.
You can put that in your top pocket.
Well, that's what we, and I say that, you know, my pals, you know, who helped me make these records, that's what we decided to do, was to try and find some material which you don't hear all the time. And if we did, well, I mean, if we'd done Silent Night, which is the, you know, let's face it, you know, there's been a cover
that is
or
a
two
standard
of that,
yeah, that is a standard.
But we decided if we were going to do very well-known ones, tunes, we were going to give them a completely new suit of clothes if we could, but in general try and find tunes that were not the same 12 tunes that everyone seems to do. and also do a few originals as well. But you have to, you can't be too arty about the thing. You know, Christmas is, you've got to join in with it. You know, so you've got to find out, yes, certainly we wanted to do it a little bit differently from everybody else, but still with the same, you know, it is Christmas.
There's
know,
a sentimentality to it that has to be there. And to I guess, disregard that or even disrespect it, it's not proper. Why make the record if you're going to go there?
Exactly.
Well, one of the things, I know you worked with Ry Cooder on one, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And it's one that really has captured my attention because it does reflect that idea of, you know, this happens in real life. You know, we see, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, and I always do cry when the angel gets his wings.
So do I.
Every time. But there are other parts on Christmas Day of things happen. And one of the songs, A Dollar Short of Happy, why don't you set this up and I'm going to play it. Tell the audience what this song is about and the context it's in.
Well, it's actually, I mentioned to Ry on one of our phone calls. He said, "What are you up to?" And I said, "Well, I've had this interesting idea. They've asked me to do a Christmas record, and I think I'm going to do it." And he rather characteristically was quite huffy about it. "Oh, what do you want to waste your time on that for?" You know, that wasn't going to make a scrap of difference to me at that point. But the next day, he sent me these lyrics. And these great set of lyrics, and you've been kind enough to point, you know, as you've been kind enough to point out. And he told me that he saw a guy standing by the side of the road holding a sign up saying "A Dollar Short of Happy," and thought it was just a brilliant title for a song. And sadly, let's hope that his fantastic slogan, you know, got him a few dollars. But that's what inspired it, and I guess he made the rest up.
The ghost of Christmas Future visited Ry that night, I think, and that had a big effect on it. Let's listen to this now. Nick Lowe is our guest. His new album is entitled Quality Street, and this is a song called A Dollar Short of Happy on 88.5 KCSN.
A dollar short of happy, can I get one from you? A dollar short on Christmas, just a smile won't do. Standing on the corner with my dog named Blue. She don't know it's Christmas, so it's down to you.
That is one of just many wonderful songs from the new album Quality Street. It is Nick Lowe's latest Christmas record, and I, you know, I don't know why I shy away from using it, because you've expressed to me, even sitting here talking now, how you got into the spirit and you did respect the tradition. You just wanted to make sure you didn't ape things that have been done before and that you tried to put some real heart into these songs.
Yes, and make a record that people might want to get out next Christmas, you know.
Your own Christmas, tradition. You know? You wanted to start your own tradition. Yeah, exactly. It would be a great tradition that people would listen to a Nick Lowe holiday record for time immemorial, would you not say?
I can't.
Irving Berlin and Nick Lowe. I mean, I think we, you know, come on, let's go for it. We aim high at KCSN, Nick.
Yes, that's probably a little too high, but.
Well, we've also been too high in our day, so that's okay, too. You were discussing how in recording this record, you got into it and you got into the spirit, but it was almost a surreal experience, I guess, on one hand, because you were finishing up the record in May and the sun is shining and summer is upon us and you're finishing up a record of the holiday Christmas spirit, and then you had to wait until now to like rejoin the process. How was it like for you having to sit it out?
You've explained it very eloquently. Yes, when we started, I actually thought, because we started this time last year, certainly finding material, trying to, you know, decide what material.
So you were in and of the Christmas period then, where you could get the feel.
I thought initially that was going to be essential for us to sort of have the energy from last Christmas to actually record the thing. I thought it'd be impossible to do it if it wasn't Christmas. So so I was very worried when I fell almost as soon as we started the project. I got really quite ill. For about 3 or 4 weeks, I was completely out of action, right over last Christmas, in fact. So we had to get cracking after we started recording straight after last Christmas. And I thought we were going to have to festoon the studio with holly, you know, and have Christmas and fake presents and things like that. Not a bit of it. Once you actually start doing it, it's just like making any other record.
Right.
In fact. But we did have a ball doing it. It was very good fun. But what made this record different from any of the others I've ever done is that when you finish recording an album, there's a sort of a sense of excitement that builds. You know, you hand it in.
The campaign is on.
Yeah, the campaign starts and everything. Yeah. And people are, whether they mean it or not, they say they like it, you know. And,
right.
And then it comes out and the review is always very exciting. And it sort of builds and then you're touring it and all the rest of it. And there's a sort of a build until it's over. You know, it's time to think of another record. But with this one, as you said, I had to finish it and hand it in by the 1st of May. And so.
Because, yeah, you know, May, the people have got Christmas on their mind in May, Nick. Come on. It's a new market.
The reason they told us, I don't know how true this is, but the reason they told us is that Walmart plan what they're going to put in the racks.
This is true.
You know, in sort of June. And so that's the reason why.
You can never get ahead of the machine too far. It is true, though. The bigger retailers, everything is, you know, it's 6 months out.
Yeah, I don't know whether Walmart are going to be that interested in this thing.
Really. Oh, after being on KCSN today, Nick, this is going to be the game changer. They're going to, as we like to think, they're going to rack at least 5,000 units, at least. That's the old record guy in me talking. I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
I like that sort of talk.
Well, you know, it's just the reality we live in, and fingers crossed that they will recognize that this is a special Christmas record. It's Nick Lowe who's joining us on 88.5 KCSN, a man who I have profound respect for. We're going to talk about not only the new Quality Street effort, but we're going to talk about, you know, your life in song and your life in the studio and your life certainly is an inspiration to me and a lot of other people in your music. Let's play another one right now from Quality Street. This is one that I imagine this has real life relatability for everybody. A Day at the Airport. I mean, I can't go towards LAX around the holidays, so I can only imagine what was in your head when you decided that this was a song you were going to do on this record.
Well, this is one I wrote, actually. I thought of it about 2 days after I'd been approached with the idea of doing this record, and I found myself, I'd done a TV show with Mavis Staples in Zurich, Switzerland, and I...
Did you weep? When I saw her most recently a few months back, I literally, you know, I saw the light. I started to weep. She's so powerful.
Yeah,
she's so powerful.
She is extraordinary, yeah. Quite extraordinary.
So go on. You were in Zurich.
Yes, and it had been a great evening. My flight was delayed, and I found myself sitting in Zurich airport with quite a nasty hangover.
Hmm.
But one of the great pluses of being able to write songs is that a delayed flight or a traffic jam is no problem, really, because you can just sort of work on something with a little idea and, you know, you take your office with you, so to speak, you know. And I suddenly, the idea for this daft, silly song came into my head of a guy trying to make it home for Christmas, and the airport gets snowed in, and he, whilst waiting for his flight to... Well, before it gets snowed in, he's waiting for his flight to be rescheduled, and he goes to sleep. And when he wakes up, the airport has been closed, and he finds himself in the airport, deserted airport, over Christmas. Well, there was somebody pointed out to me the other day who'd heard this song. They said it sounds like the guy is not too unhappy about the fact that he's not going to be able to.
Was there an open bar at the Christmas? I'm just wondering.
I should have explored that. Perhaps
you, and if anyone could,
it's pretty thin stuff, you know. But it's you know, funny song.
Well, it's one we're going to hear right now. It is from Quality Street. It's Nick Lowe's latest, and it is a song entitled "Christmas at the Airport" on 88.5 KCSN.
Passengers are reminded to keep personal items of luggage with them at all times. Any unattended luggage in the terminal building will be removed by the security services and may be destroyed.
Outside the taxi window, on the way to catch my flight, I notice no...
Nick Lowe is our guest, and we just heard "Christmas at the Airport," and Nick and I are doing treatments now for the video for that. You talked in all seriousness about, because of the fantasy-like quality, the way the song came to you, it has a jauntiness, but I guess it would be that of some guy who discovers, well, I got to make the best of Christmas at the airport. And I think we agreed that Fred Astaire might be seen dancing through the terminal, and we'll see if we can somehow get Fred engaged in the video treatment, Nick.
Well, with computer-generated graphics, anything is possible.
So we have a good idea. If there's anyone out there who wants to finance this video, come to Nick and I, and we'll give you a full treatment. It won't take a lot to coax the treatment out of us, right, Nick? It won't take hardly anything at all. I drop names in these interviews just to show how important you are and to act like I'm important, so please forgive me. And I've already dropped Rye's name, and Ron Sexsmith also wrote a song for you. And the idea of a guy, two guys actually, a guy from Canada and a guy from the UK, where I would assume that it should be a Boxing Day record as opposed to a Christmas record, but that's just me. You also, I read an interview with you once where John Hiatt, a friend of yours, was talking to you about his discipline in songwriting. And how he literally has an office and he goes to it and he punches in, and he's not happy unless he's, and he's told me this story too. He's not happy unless he's written two songs a day. It's not a fulfillment. You know, there's no fulfillment unless two songs a day. And you were aghast at that. So clearly you don't have that discipline in your own approach to songwriting.
Well, I wasn't really aghast. I was filled with admiration. No, I don't really have that discipline. I did try, actually, after he told me that. I did actually try, and I had a mixed results, I suppose.
Right.
But I have to really wait to be sort of inspired, yeah. You know. And I don't know if you want to hear my latest theory on how it works, but... Well, my latest one, I've had a few, but my latest one is that you imagine if you're in an apartment with kind of thin walls, and the apartment next door to you has got a radio in it tuned to this really cool station. It's on day and night.
It's 88.5 that it would be tuned to. Go on.
And you can sort of just hear it coming through the wall all the time. And then one day they program this new song. And you're doing the washing up in your apartment, and you think, whoa, that's good. And you can hear it coming through the wall. And you think, man, that's a good song. I want to learn that. And you hear it just enough for it to attract your attention the first time, and then it stops. And then you never know when they're going to put it on again. But each time it comes on, you grab a wine glass or something and listen up at the wall, and you learn a little bit more of it, and then it stops. And that can go on for... weeks,
yeah.
Sometimes until you've learnt the whole song, but it's almost as if the songs have been written. I know I've heard lots of songwriters say that. It's like almost like they've been written. You have to somehow kind of pull them down.
Right,
you know?
And, they're there.
Yeah,
they're, but where is
but,
there?
But you have to kind of listen to them. If you start working on them, when I listen to a lot of my early records, I can hear, and I don't listen to them very often, you know, but occasionally if they come on the radio, I'll think, oh, man, that's almost good. You know, that's almost good. Why did you force it? You know, and that's what you do when you're a kid. You know, you force things a lot. Well, that's what I did, certainly. And when you get older, And I never thought I'd be doing this at the age I'm at. But when you get older, you get more, well, you get fussier, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's one thing. You get
stuck in your ways.
Yeah, well, you get sort of suspicious of your own shtick. You know, you're always trying to surprise yourself. But when you get onto an idea, the thing to do is to kind of listen as opposed to, oh, I'm writing a song now. It's a curious process.
So if we see Niccolo leaning towards a wall anywhere as he's going around, he has a purpose. He's being inspired, folks. So don't think that, you know,
if I'm carrying a wine glass.
Yeah, he's not daft. he actually has a purpose in doing that. Well, we are going to now listen to one from your youth, and I'm going to ask you to review it if you're not too uncomfortable doing so, because this is a song that so many people know and love, and it does speak to, you know, an era, and I shared with you my, you know, how that was the era that inspired me to get into radio and everything else. So let's go back now to a record that here in the States was pure pop for now people. Let's listen to Niccolo and one of his classics, It's So It Goes, on 88.5 KCSN.
I remember the night the kid cut off his right arm, in a bid to save a bit of power. He got 50,000 watts in a big acoustic tower. Security's so tight tonight. Oh.
Well, I'm sorry, Nick. You know, I start to reminisce even as I hear it. You know, it goes back to when you and I began, and you were making records, and I was a kid in outside of Cleveland, eager to play them on the radio. And it was a time when, hard to believe that, like, American programmers would be threatened by a song like that, that it would be, you know, considered new wave or punk. It's times change, don't they, Nick?
They sure do.
Now, you mentioned the fact that when you go back and listen to early things, you can't help but, you know, think of coulda, shoulda, woulda. When you hear a song like that, does that one hold up for you? Does it, you know, pass muster for you all these years later?
Yeah, that one does, actually. It's rather sweet.
I picked an okay one, then good.
It's sweet, and it's very simply done. You know, it was done in a funny little studio we used to use up in North London. Some good records we recorded up there. A lot of Elvis Costello's records were recorded up there when I was producing him. You know, back in the back at that time. That one's okay. I just said I sound very callow, you know, just like a...
Well, the I'm going to do a little Rorschach type thing, because as you mentioned back in that day, as I knew you were coming in, I started to revive my own personal sense of how much I loved the pub rock scene that evolved in that era around the mid-70s and late 70s. And Brinsley Schwartz, you know, a landmark band that you were in the beginning. And I mentioned to you how much when I first went to England, I made the sojourn to the Hope and Anchor Bar, because for me it was like going to a CBGB's or going to the Whiskey A Go-Go. You had to go to that place. Later on, Rock Pile, you became known as Basher because you could get records done. And you did produce a lot of records. And in an interview, in a self-deprecating fashion, you talked about how what you thought you brought to the producing of records was that you had an internal instinct that if a band came in, you could identify really what the drive, who the drivers in the band were and who were going to be the more, you know, engaged and who were going to just follow. And that I think you called it man management. And that was your real skill as a producer. Now, I know you were being self-deprecating, but there had to be a certain, you had to evaluate the personalities of bands to get out of them what they were trying to get out. True?
Yes, I think that was certainly an element of it back then, trying to find out where the power lay. You know, it might not have been where you'd think it was in the glamorous lead singer. You know, you'd think, well, he'd be the one that that you'd have to get on your side, you know, but it might actually be the quiet bass player or the sort of sulky drummer, or he might be the person, or she, or indeed she might be the person that you need to just get on your side to help you get the job done. I mean, it's not just in the music business. I think that probably works in all
it's reading the room.
Reading the room, yes. And I enjoyed that side of it. But back then, I got it wrong quite a lot of times. And it was, you were able in those days to go to the big wigs at the record company and say, well, I'm sorry, gentlemen, you know, I'm afraid the band didn't get anywhere for a couple of days. You know, they weren't really feeling it, you know. And then when the 1980s came along and the way people made records suddenly changed, you know, it suddenly went digital,
right.
You know. And people like me coming into record companies and saying, sorry, the boys didn't feel like it. Suddenly it was, what do you mean the boys didn't feel like it? It's your job to make sure the boys did feel like it. And
get it in the edit, Nick.
Well, there was always, yes, there was always an option, of course. But anyway, it suddenly became more of a, there wasn't any room for the kinder, gentler approach.
Now, as we get into that actual period, you know, ironically, you had a, I don't want to call it a windfall, but I guess, you know, it was in many ways a windfall. Curtis Steiger interpreted Peace of an Understanding, and it ended up on the Bodyguard soundtrack. And I guess this might have been at a period where you were at one of those, you know, we've been around long enough, we come to many crossroads in our life and our career, and you were at one, and then all of a sudden you did get a windfall of royalties, you know, a good hunk of money. And I've read that was a point when you decided, you know what, I'm going to start to now, because this has given me the opportunity to make a record that reflects who I am now and what I'm thinking about, dare I say it, a mature perspective from Nick Lowe. And you committed to that idea back then. I think, was it Impossible Girl was the record that you said
about?
Right.
Right. Yes.
Girl, bird, you know, there it's a bird, here it's a girl. I think that was the UK version was Impossible Bird. In the States, it was Impossible Girl. And since, people do appreciate the fact that you have you haven't been afraid to reflect in a new perspective as you've gotten older and recognize, you know, you could still rock, you know, as you did in those days, but you also have other things to offer in song. Talk to me about the idea of I guess, acting your age and writing from a more mature perspective. That was somewhat of a conscious decision for you, wasn't it?
Well, it was, yes. It's a bit of a long and convoluted tale, which I think will bore your listeners rigid. But the I did actually come to the conclusion that I needed to, after my, as I always describe it, my brief career as a pop star, which I thoroughly enjoyed. You know, it was great, but it came to an end, like they all do, unless you're someone very, very special.
We don't know how those ones that you two with the 40-year, I don't know how that happens, but
yeah,
good for them.
Good for them, absolutely. And there's, you know, there are others, but most of us don't have that ability, and it comes to an end. The public move on to new pastures. And I thought that when it happened to me, I was sort of, I had mixed feelings. I was sort of relieved in one way because I was not in good shape. I was exhausted and used up. You know, I was uninspired and uninspiring. I didn't like myself very much. Mm. All those things. But when I took stock of what I'd done, I thought, well, I haven't done badly. If it's all got to end now, I've had a couple of hits. I've produced some pretty good records. I've done some good tours, and I've done a few good things.
You made your mark.
But I don't think I've actually really done anything really good yet. And at that time, you couldn't really get older in pop music. You could get older in jazz. You could get older in blues, you know, or even country and western at that time. I think even now, probably not. Now, at that time.
They've actually become as youth-oriented as anybody. Yeah. Everyone looks like male and female models, and that.
Yeah, that's right. But back then, no problem if you were old and comfortable. Not in pop. Oh, there's Frank Sinatra, and he was still sort of going. I guess you'd say pop. And Elvis was, well, no, Elvis was gone. But the people, a lot of the real great artists, they were still going, but no one really cared about their records anymore. Not like nowadays. There's plenty of people in their 60s and 70s doing real good work. Paul Simon, Bob Dylan, Tom Waits, Leonard Cohen, you know, they're doing great, great work. But it was practically unheard of back then. So I decided that I'd try and figure out a way of producing myself and writing songs for myself. And I came up with this song, with this record, The Impossible Bird. And it coincided with this fantastic windfall I got through Curtis doing Peace, Love, and Understanding in this movie, you know, which went absolutely through the roof.
I don't know. What did that sell? 20 million? I don't know how many. It sold a lot of
it. Like 120.
Well, that's Clive Davis. Clive always does have the touch now, doesn't he?
God bless him.
Sometimes a velvet hammer, but nonetheless the touch.
Well, you know, I got a series of very nice checks. And
Clive.
That enabled me to make this, pay for this record, pay the guys who had played on it, who had done it for nothing, and tour in the United States, where my primary audience really is. And I sort of relaunch myself, I suppose. I knew it would take some time, and a lot of my fans that I had who liked Rockpile and that much sort of more shouty stuff, I knew a lot of fans would probably drop away. But I thought they would be replaced by a new type of fan, you know, and it's worked out. I seem to have a younger audience now, who only really know my records from The Impossible Bird, and they don't really know anything about my old fashioned rock
stuff records.
They don't actually like it very much, but
they'll learn to.
Yeah, well, I'm everyone's welcome. You know, everyone's welcome. I'm really very pleased about that.
It's funny, as you talked about the fact that you respect and know artists that are in their 60s and in some cases in their 70s, and they're making vital music. Elton John was talking about The Diving Board, the new record he made with T-Bone, and he said something very similar, in which he said that Tempest from Bob Dylan was a record that Bob Dylan made for Bob Dylan. It was not made for the critics. It was not made for any perceived audience or any perceived marketplace. It was made for Bob Dylan and Bob Dylan alone. And that Elton, as we both know, had been so pop conscious and really struggled with the fact that he wouldn't be the king of the pop charts so long. He said, I have to let go of that. I just have to make a record that is about what's in my heart. And for him, it was an agonizing process to get to that point of acceptance. And hearing you talk about it now, you know, you did have that idea of acceptance, and it suited you well.
Well, mind you, I had the luxury of doing it, because I've never had Elton's enormous audience, and that's one of the sort of the pluses about not being a household name, as I am, you know, clearly not a household name. But it means that you can do what you like, and you don't sort of belong to this enormous public who don't, you know, who stop you doing things. You'd think it'd be the opposite, wouldn't you? You'd think, Elton John, can't he do anything he wants whenever he wants? But you can't really. You become the public's property, and they like it a certain way. And if you don't deliver that, you can be in trouble. Whereas if you're a little bit under the radar, as I am, which is annoying sometimes, you know, sometimes I turn up a place and there's not many people there, it's a bit of a drag.
Yeah.
You know? But on the other hand, if everything's working right, then you turn up and the place is not too big, but it's full of people, real nice folks who are really pleased to be there.
True believers.
And true believers, that's right. And everyone gets happy.
Well, that we're going to now reflect, that idea, and we'll play something from the album, The Impossible Bird, that was part of an evolutionary process and a thankful one for us at KCSN, of our guest today, Nick Lowe, on 88.5 KCSN. It's Nick Lowe on 88.5 KCSN. Nick has a wonderful new album called Quality Street. And I noticed, Nick, and it's one thing that I've noticed throughout your career, you do happen to leave with the bird, the Ms. Christmas on this back of this cover. Fantasy or reality? Does Nick get the girl?
Now, well, I like to think I do.
You did all right. You've done all right with the ladies in your day. But of course, you know, that was when you were young and randy. Now we all act with a little
slow
more.
Slow down.
we conduct ourselves in a more monogamous fashion, and that's okay too. We all have to grow up sometime. Although Peter Pan was fun, you have to admit.
Yes.
We had a good time. Nick Lowe has made this record. Nick and I, it's been a great opportunity, and I don't mean to pander to you, but, you know, as a kid in Youngstown, Ohio, the music you made in that era, you know, it's one of those things of where I found my music. You know, when you're a teenager, you find your music and you believe in something. And then when I came into radio, you know, Pittsburgh, PA, which is where I first started getting to play music like this in Akron, Ohio, you know, you weren't supposed to play this stuff. You were supposed to play Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know. Quit playing that, you know, whatever they called it. So it's been such an honor to reunite and have you come by today and to let you know that we're here to celebrate and support you because you are a great legend to us and your legacy will be honored here. And I want you to know that, so you have a home here in Los Angeles.
That's very kind of you, Sky. Thanks very much.
Well, and you've made a record that, you know, people who love Christmas music, and many people do, this album is something that has its heart and, yes, the wit of Nick Lowe in it. And I can't thank you enough for coming by today to KCSN. And we're going to leave with one. As you wrap up the record, we'll wrap up our time together today. This is I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. And I believe that you believe that, Nick. Now, bring a gift for me, if that's the way it is, Nick? Where's my gift? I wanted something. Could you bring Ms. Christmas by all neatly wrapped? Just kidding you, my friend. It's been an honor to have you here. I'll say it one more time. Quality Street. Give me the idea of the title. Is that a street?
Quality Street is a brand of toffees and sweets that come out every Christmas in the UK. Ever since I was a kid, they probably sell them at the rest of the year, but at Christmas time, for some reason, everyone has got a tin of these things. There are toffees and chocolates wrapped up in brightly colored.
Here I get all my family C's candies is what we get. It has that same element of, you know, it's C's, and for my father, may he rest in peace, it was C's turtles. And if I gave him that at Christmas, that all the other gifts didn't matter, but boy, that box of C's turtles, ooh, could he have two? May I have another? Well, we've been blessed to have Nick Lowe join us today here at 88.5 KCSN. And of course, KCSN is from California State University, Northridge. It's 88.5 KCSN and KCSN HD1, Northridge, Los Angeles. And we have been blessed by the Christmas spirit of one Nick Lowe. Thank you for coming by today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You got it. And this is going to take us out. And it will be Christmas every day from here on in, thanks to our good friend Nick Lowe on 88.5 KCSN.
The snowman brings the snow. He might just like to know. He put a great big smile